Welcome to PR360, where every week the brightest minds in public relations, communications, and media discuss the topics and trends you need to know about. PR360 was produced in partnership with Global Results Communications. Now here's your host, Todd Perry.
Welcome back to PR360. My guest today is Paul Cohen. Paul runs Milk & Honey PR's North American business and brings three decades of experience shaping vital conversations in ways that matter. A trusted communications advisor to executives and teams across three continents, Paul has represented multinational corporations, startups, industry associations, sovereign governments, and nonprofit organizations. He leads a powerhouse team out of Milk & Honey's New York office and works alongside clients' leadership teams to help organizations tell their stories to successfully drive business results. So, Paul, is there anything I've missed?
No, I think that's pretty good.
So, to get to the fun part here, I guess you've had meetings at the UN, Pentagon, Kremlin, the Great Hall of the People. What brought you to these important centers of government?
Before I started Milk & Honey in North America, I spent most of my career at global top five agencies. I was with Ketchum for 17 years, with Burson Marsteller, when it was still Burson Marsteller, for 5 years before that. Lived and worked on three continents, 4 years in China, 5 years in Brussels. Most of my time in between was on airplanes, traveling mainly to BRICS markets. As you noted in the introduction, my clients, especially at the time, really were comprised of global sovereigns and major international institutions, Fortune 100 companies. And so I got to be on the sidelines as major decisions were being made, major deals were being negotiated on the business side, on a political side, from an environmental perspective. So it was a real privilege to see the sausage being made, but also really to understand the vital role that communications plays on bringing about positive change in these areas and making sure that you're really communicating the rationale for pretty momentous decisions.
And what type of decisions were these? Would you say were they mostly environmental in nature, or
really all of the above? I mean, on the political side, advising nations on, or again on the communications front, so I don't want to overstate that. But I mean, for major arms control deals, I worked with the United Nations on COP15, which was the first major COP, before, which was in Copenhagen. Before the Copenhagen meeting, COPs were mainly technical. They're called Conference of the Parties. So the parties got together to hash out deals. Copenhagen was the first one where they were hoping to have the leaders make a real lasting deal, which ended up happening in Paris, 6 years later. But this was the first one where all the world leaders were there, where there was a major push. And at the time, we got a groundswell of popular movement to push for change. Our leaders let us down. But you see that happening too. And I think you understand when you're in the room where these things happen, you really get to see how things come together or sometimes how they fall apart.
When it comes to influencing the public on getting behind like a big environmental deal, what is the best way to try to capture them to care or to take action? Because I remember I used to work at an ad agency and I was writing copy and we were trying to get people to buy solar panels, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you would tell people, you know, you're going to save the planet in 3 weeks by getting panels and no one would buy them. But if you say, hey, if you're going to save $5 on your electricity bill, then people are going to pony up the money. When you're trying to sell a big idea, like backing a big climate proposal, how do you get the average, you know, the layman who's maybe on the fence about it to care?
Yeah. I mean, the glib answer, but the real one is that there's no one size fits all, because when you're dealing with multiple stakeholders, they're all motivated by different elements. So really it's important, and this is true whether it's for an international climate deal or a small startup trying to make a point about mental health among families, is really understand right. what's motivating your stakeholders and what's going to either convince them to shift their perceptions or to reinforce their perceptions and then take those perceptions and drive action. So there's really not a, oh, environment, you got to hit the pocketbook, or environment, you got to hit guilt, or don't touch guilt. Talk about, I mean, it's all of the above or none of the above, depending on the real specifics. So I do shy away from a one size fits all approach for communications.
That's fine. I guess, you know, issues that big deserve a lot more thought than that anyway. Right. So, keeping with world affairs, I've seen you post on socials about the importance of journalism when it comes to securing democracy, freedom for the world. What are your thoughts on the current state of world journalism in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, this year is a pretty massive year. I mean, 2.6 billion voters in 81 countries either have gone or are planning to go to the polls, or are eligible, I should say, to go to the polls to determine our collective future. I'm actually a member of the advisory board for the International Center for Journalists. And a few months ago, the president of the organization said that journalists are on the front line in the battle for democracy. And I really think that's true. And I think on a day-to-day basis, there's always a healthy tension between PRs and journalists, and, you know, there's kind of a frenemies relationship. But we in our industry must never lose our belief in the vital role that journalists play in shining a light on what matters most in the world. And journalism is in a precarious place. And certainly in the U.S., we've seen the really pretty horrific demise of local journalism. There were something like 30,000, I think, media jobs that were lost in the U.S. in the last year. Now, that's not all journalists, but massive amounts. And what that does is it makes being an informed citizen so much harder. And from a selfish perspective, as a public relations professional, it means that stories sometimes that we want to pitch fall through the cracks because there aren't enough journalists, or they don't have the expertise because they're shuffling around to cover things. But I think it's a real loss for, frankly, for us as a society. And nurturing journalism is hugely important for us.
Yeah, it's so funny that in a world where there is so much money in media, but the most vital thing when it comes to that is having a hard time making a buck. And it's a very strange thing where it was like everything suddenly, you know, went online and then went to specifically to Facebook.
Yeah.
They draw all the eyes there. And then Facebook goes, you know what? We're not going to do any type of news stuff anymore, or we're going to severely squash all of it. So it's like they brought everybody into a room and then locked the doors. And what do you do to get out? It's a troubling thing, you know, especially, you know, with a democracy on the line. One hopes for, you know, a new technology to come around that makes it, you know, that then frees journalists back up and gets a little more money into it, you know, makes it a little more valuable to get the information. I saw that one of Milk and Honey's recent PR wins was a cute story about a $3.99 Goodwill Voss. Voss or Vase? Am I being pretentious if I say Voss?
Here's what someone told me once is if it's under $100, it's a vase. If it's over $100, it's a vase. So this started life as a vase, became a vase, and ended up life as a vase again.
I love it. Yeah, so what's the basic story? So it was a vase for $3.99 at Goodwill that was sold for over $100,000?
That's right. Yeah. So
Wright
Auction House is a client of ours, and they're respected, but small national art auction house. And they brought us in to elevate their brand identity and name recognition within a pretty fiercely competitive space. And we were really challenged with identifying unique storylines to bring widespread attention to the firm, especially challenging in an industry that's so dominated by the large players. Yeah. So for each auction that they do, our team dives in and looks at the work that are being sold, finds, you know, potential storylines. And my team found this incredible human interest story. As you said, a woman bought a really interesting vase for $3.99. And she knew it was special. I mean, she kind of just, she knew it. And then she reached out to a Facebook group. Someone offered to sell it to buy it from her for $10,000. So she thought, okay, that's something. Yeah. So she got in touch with the experts, the glass experts at Wright Auction House, and they came and they knew exactly what it was, which was a Scarpa vase and in a unique style. And it was in perfect condition. And so they put it up for auction. And what we did is we seeded a story before the auction. So they only, it was only priced at $50,000. So we got a story in a major outlet, which got attention to the sale and to the story. And then it sold for over $100,000, and my team just went into action and just told it over and over again. We got the New York Times, which not only did it cover it, but it put the Richard Wright, who's the CEO of the auction house, as their quote of the day. USA Today, Washington Post, World News Tonight, Today Show, AP, CNN. It spread internationally over Christmas break. Richard and some of the glass experts were doing interviews with journalists in Australia and the UK and everywhere else. And it was just one of those perfect stories. But I think from a lessons learned, it's one of those things that seem inevitable after the fact. Oh, yeah. Of course, who couldn't tell a $4 vase selling for $100,000? But the truth is those stories don't tell themselves. And it's identifying the story, finding the right reporters to kind of nurture the story and start it and then see it to fruition. And then just ride the wave. But, you know, again, this is my team was working really in overdrive to get those easy stories told, because those are never easy. And it was really valuable. And it had, you know, what was really important was that this wasn't just ego. It had a significant positive business effect on the auction house, with the increase in valuation inquiries, heightened social engagements, expanded their audience. So, you know, I mean, which shouldn't be surprising to an audience of PRs, but PR really works when you do it right.
Yeah, exactly. And the interesting thing that I was thinking when you were telling that story was, and not to get into the thought process of the client, but I think of that, and I think of being on the PR end and the client going, not the story we want to tell. We'd like to tell the story about this, you know, $300,000 painting or the $5 million Rembrandt we did, you know, versus the $399 accidental kind of thing, right?
Well, I mean, our client was great, and I think they recognized why this was just a cool story. And I mean, this was literally true. I was, you know, bragging about this at a holiday party, and someone said, "Oh yeah, I heard about that. That's amazing." And like, it had nothing to do with me. People were already talking about it, which is really, you know that you're entering the cultural conversation in that way. But our client recognized A, this was a big story, and B, that the way they were shining was that they were the experts that were trusted with this $4 piece and understood the value and put it in a good place so that it wasn't, you know, that was treating both the buyer, but also the piece itself with the respect that it deserved. And then again, priced it at a way that would generate more interest, and then, you know, worked it up. So they were thrilled with the coverage because it was the right sort of coverage as well.
That's perfect. That's a home run all the way across the board. It's interesting, when I'm not doing this show, I write for a website called Upworthy. And we're kind of really well known for doing like viral stories. And a brand, we'll work with a brand sometimes and they'll go, "Okay, could you make this go viral?" And well, it kind of doesn't work that way. You know, like, "Hi, we're this shopping, you know, we're this grocery store, and we have this great deal on peaches. Can you make this go viral so a million people want to see it?" You go, "You know, actually, if it's not a good story, it's not a good story. You can't force anything, people to click on anything. You have to have something, but the good journalists, the good PR people, they can see it and they can sniff it out and, as you said, nurture it."
Yeah.
Speaking of nurturing, I saw on your, I believe it was your LinkedIn page, that one of the things you were saying that a brand must be nurtured, quote, at all times. Mm-hmm. Can you unpack that and let the people know your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you can't nurture reputations any other way. If you're only paying attention to your brand, to your reputation when you need it now, you're doing yourself a really grave disservice. Every organization has multiple stakeholders, and they need to be engaged to ensure that they understand and recognize your company's value and values, both sides of that. And this ensures that you can take advantage of good times, but also weather the bad times with much greater efficacy. It's the same reason why professional musicians do scales when they're starting out every day, or professional ball players do their stretches every day. It's the most basic thing, but if you don't practice this reputation hygiene and really nurture it at all times, it's gonna go flaccid. You're gonna lose your mojo, and then right when you need it, it's not there for you.
Right. Somebody I interviewed on here said that PR is a 24/7 business, and that's one of the things they stress to clients when they're first signing up. Again, if it's a startup or they're just getting into, when their brand has hit that point where they need it, one of the most important things is, we're not just here for the crisis, right?
100%. Yeah. And again, even you look at the Wright story, they knew that was important. They wanted to tell this story. They jumped in, and it's not, and we're telling more stories now for them. It's a constant build. It's not, hey, good job for that one story you told us. It's keep going. And we want clients that challenge us in that way.
Yeah. Also in a LinkedIn post, you noted that in a, quote, crowded space, it's important to tap into the zeitgeist and tell compelling stories. When you're in a crowded space, there's a lot of people shooting for the zeitgeist. How do you, for lack of a better term, hit it right on the nose? How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. It's first really listening, and listening to what those cultural conversations are. And it's up to us to identify what people are talking about and find ways for our clients to jump into the slipstream of those conversations and join them, shape them, lead them where appropriate. So I think that's the first step. The other is to challenge ourselves to find stories that are compelling, credible, and newsworthy in a way that can break through to the zeitgeist. And I use that term all the time, and my team kind of mocks me for it. But I think it's just so powerful, because that's what people are talking about. It's really what's in the air around us that people are discussing, are engaging in, and how can our clients play a role is I don't think there's a more important question for us as PR practitioners to ask ourselves every day.
I believe it's also really important to make sure that the brand you're representing is a good fit to be part of that conversation, right? Nothing's worse or reeks of desperation when the wrong brand jumps into the conversation where they're not wanted,
No, I think you're right. And one element is this notion of purpose. And every company on the planet now defines themselves as a purpose-driven business. And it's a phrase that is risks losing all meaning. But there are companies that are genuinely doing good in the world, and we're there to help them, again, tell their stories and ensure that they're walking the talk. We also claim to be a purpose-driven business, but we set about proving it. We're a B Corp, and we're very proud of being a B Corp. We're one of the first PR firms to achieve B Corp accreditation, are now the highest scoring B Corp PR firm in the world. But what that means is A, we've got a roadmap supplied by B Corp and other organizations that measure us to really define how we need to behave, how we treat our employees, how we treat our clients, how we engage with our local community, how we engage with the planet. But the other is it serves as an imprimatur to say to others, yeah, these guys do it right. And then we take our own experiences and bring that to bear for our client and make them, whether they're embracing B Corp themselves, or we have clients in the impact investor space, we have clients that are nonprofits, clients that are make consumer products, but that serve to dismantle outdated stereotypes or mm-hmm. ways of thinking. So we have a client roster that we're really proud of. And it's, ambitious, high growth businesses with purpose at their core. And it makes a difference because we're speaking the same language with our clients.
And you don't feel like you're having to drag them, to eat their vegetables to do the right thing, right?
No, and you're right. That's important. And our clients, we don't always agree on strategies and things like that. But from a big picture standpoint, our clients, one-to-one, are doing the right things.
Do you get a sense that kind of the wave has crested a bit and a lot of brands are now pulling back from being involved in kind of social justice issues or, social issues in general? I got the sense from talking to a few people on this show that might be the case, but, do you think that's the case or brands just as involved as they were maybe a year ago?
I think they're pulling back to some degree. I think brands have always skated a fine line between ignoring the world around them and perhaps over-indexing in their perspective on the world around them. I think events from a few years ago pushed companies to take a more public stand in a way that I think was well-intentioned. I think it was mostly appropriate, but it probably went a little too far. And, why is, my candy bar taking a stand on, a major geopolitical issue? It's just sort of there's a bit that just kind of it gets a little too much. Like, okay, I'm glad I guess you feel this way, but I just want to eat a candy bar. And I think as we've seen, the world is rarely either or, right? And I think there are lots of shades of gray, and clients or companies, I should say, are recognizing that you don't have to lead on every social issue. And it's really a matter of what's true to your ethos. And is your taking a stand on an issue relevant to your stakeholders? Are they going to go, oh, wow, I see that. That makes sense. Or, wow, I'm surprised, but I really applaud that. And that aligns with my values or whatever it is. Or is that just, what are you doing? Why is a company in your industry talking about an issue in this realm? It doesn't make sense. So that was a long way of saying, yes, I think we probably reached the high watermark of company external engagement in world affairs and social issues. And there's some level of retreat, which I think is probably healthy.
Good. Well, speaking of retreat, Paul, I've had a great conversation with you today, but we're coming up towards the end of the show. How can people follow you and what you're doing and keep abreast with it? And follow Milk and Honey. What's the call to action here?
Well, please do reach out to me. Very easy. paul@milkandhoneypr.com. All one word. MilkandHoneyPR.com. Or check us out on the web, just www.milkandhoneypr.com. Check me out on LinkedIn. I'm also on X and Twitter, or X and Facebook and Instagram. But LinkedIn and email are probably the best ways, but I'd love to hear from anyone.
Oh, okay. And what's the X handle? Just because I'm sure there's a couple Paul Cohens out there.
It's Paul_Cohen1.
Thank you very much. Well, again, pleasure speaking with you today, Paul, and best wishes to you and good luck in 2024.
Thanks so much. Really enjoyed it.
PR360 was produced by Todd Perry in partnership with Global Results Communications. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review wherever you get podcasts. Follow GRC on all socials at Global Results. Follow Todd on Twitter at Todd A. Perry. That's Todd with one D. Talk to you next week.